Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Hey, I'm Steph, and this is Not Today. Hello, and welcome back. Or welcome, if you're new here. I hope you all had a fun Halloween. I've been really enjoying seeing everyone's costumes. It seems like people just get more and more creative every single year. I've seen so many, but 5 seconds before I started recording, I saw a woman wearing a blue dress with a goldfish on the front, and she had this big plastic bag around her torso and like up to her neck, and she was a carnival goldfish in a bag. Just incredible. I love them all. But anyway, before we get into our story this week, I wanted to let you know that the poll for bonus episode number 45 is up over on our Patreon. As of right now, it's looking like we'll be talking about Project X Haran, which is basically like the movie Project X, but in real life. Myrta, a 15-year-old girl, sent 78 friends on Facebook a public invitation to her 16th birthday party at her home. However, the event was set to public, and it got picked up and taken over online. What should have been Myrta's 16th birthday party ended up as a gathering of tens of thousands of people, causing riots and a great deal of damage on September 21st, 2012, in the town of Haren-Groningen, Netherlands. As I said, it's looking like this story is going to win, and it's what we'll be talking about over on Patreon this month, but there's also two other great choices on the poll, so if you want to vote on what story you'd like to hear and get access to a bunch of bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. But with all of that out of the way, let's get into the case I have for you today. Listener discretion is advised. On the afternoon of Thanksgiving Day 2021, Nanette Stuber sat in her car in front of a house she had never been to before, in the tiny village of Farmersville, Illinois, anxiously waiting to hear back from her friend. Nanette knew her friend Leslie Reeves had been to that house the night before for a first date with a man named Chris Smith. Leslie was extremely excited about this date. She and Chris had met online after chatting back and forth a bit. She felt like it might be a really good connection. They went to the Uptown Saloon for drinks and then ended up going back to his house. But by now, the date was long over, and Leslie wasn't answering her phone, so Nanette was worried. She had called 911 to request a welfare check, and at that point, she was waiting for EMTs and Montgomery County Sheriff's deputies to descend on the house. As Nanette sat there, she saw there was another woman parked nearby doing the same thing she was. So Nanette rolled her window down to talk to this girl, which was when she met 16-year-old Breon Smith, who was clearly waiting for someone as well. Breon asked if she was waiting for Chris, and Nanette told her that she was looking for her friend Leslie. They were sat in front of Chris's house, so Breon decided she would walk up and try to knock. When she walked up to the house and knocked, nobody answered. When she walked around to the back of the house, she saw that the window on the back door had been broken. And to her shock, she could see Chris lying on the floor inside. She could only see his feet, but that was all she needed to see. She immediately backed away, ran back to her car, and called 911. Nanette was even more scared than before. Breon reported that the back window had been shattered, and that she saw a foot of a body lying on the ground inside the home, and then she told the dispatcher that she was only 16 and couldn't deal with this. When the EMTs arrived, they found that one person in the home was alive and the other was dead, which was when they called the sheriff's office for backup. Chris was brought out on a stretcher with a sheet over him, which made Breon panic. Chris was alive, but he was hanging on by a thread. EMTs had found Chris barely conscious and unable to say anything about the shooting. They rushed him to the hospital as deputies continued to search the house. Nanette kept watching and hoping they'd bring Leslie out. She'd seen Chris get taken away in an ambulance, but there was no sign of Leslie. Until finally, a detective approached her and asked her for a photo of Leslie. She showed him her phone, and he gave her horrible news, saying, quote, "I'm sorry to have to tell you this. Your friend has been murdered." The officer told Nanette her friend had been shot. He didn't tell her where Leslie had been shot, but he did tell her that she went quickly. Investigators needed to figure out what went wrong. Was this a domestic dispute between the two people in the house, or had there been someone else involved who fled the scene? When lead crime scene investigator Josh Easton first approached the house, he noticed the glass of the side door had been broken out, and inside there was an obvious struggle. This was a messy crime scene with a lot of blood. The refrigerator was pulled away from the wall, the kitchen table was pushed, and the chairs had been knocked over. Upon searching the house, he didn't find any weapons, but he did find two silver-colored bullet casings from a 9mm gun, one in the kitchen and the other near Leslie's body, which led him and the other investigators to suspect that a third person had to be involved. This wasn't just a first date gone wrong. Easton took note of everything, including the burnt pizza that had been left in the oven. It seemed as if the two were having their date, which was interrupted by this attack. They were cooking a pizza to enjoy together, which they'd never get to eat. Easton assumed the suspect arrived at the door as the pizza was in the oven, and after they broke the window and entered the home, both Chris and Leslie tried to fight him off, which was when Chris was shot and Leslie went into the living room to try to hide. Leslie had been shot one time in the head, which killed her instantly. She had been killed execution style. Her body had been found in the living room, while Chris had been found in the kitchen, clinging to life. Easton said of the 1,800 crime scenes he had ever been to, this had been one of the most horrific. There was blood everywhere. The cabinets, the countertops, the refrigerator. Blood covered every corner of the kitchen. They needed to figure out what happened and who the true target of this attack was. And that began by learning about who Chris and Leslie were.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Chris Smith was a 48-year-old divorced father who worked for a pool contractor. He was well-known in the community. Bartender Dina LeGrand said he was known in town as the guy who grew banana trees and giant pumpkins. She said, quote, "Chris was a nice guy. He would hang out here frequently. He was friends with most of the people in town. Everybody knew him. I remember one Halloween, he donated hundreds of pumpkins for decorations, for any of the kids to paint. He gave back to his community." Chris Smith was the kind of man who everyone really adored. Friends and family of Chris couldn't even imagine anyone wanting to hurt him, let alone kill him. Neither Chris's mother, Sharon Costanza, or his sister, Ashley Holcomb, were ever worried about Chris. According to them, he kept to himself. He spent the majority of his time working in his backyard alongside his dog, Tiki. Chris's Beagle Terrier mix, Tiki, stayed by his side all night after he was shot. An EMT told the family that Tiki may have helped Chris make it through the night by huddling with him for roughly 12 hours that he was bleeding before he was rescued, giving him some much-needed warmth. If your heart wasn't already shattered, there you go. 45-year-old Leslie Reeves had a master's degree in engineering and was an entrepreneur. She was the owner of All You Studio and Party Place in Troy, Illinois, about an hour south of Farmersville. She taught Pilates and self-defense classes, advocated for domestic abuse awareness, gave public speeches on women's safety, and was very heavily involved in her local community as well. She had a YouTube channel to advertise her classes where she said, quote, "Empower yourself against aggression and assault as we teach you easy-to-learn self-defense techniques. Power up." She was passionate about helping women in abusive relationships. Both Chris and Leslie seemed like they were such amazing people, who genuinely cared about the people around them and gave back to their communities and were just good to be around. This whole situation is so heartbreaking because these two good people went on a first date together and it ended in horrific tragedy, and it was completely unnecessary. Leslie also had two children and had been divorced from a previous husband. Friends of Leslie said she had her own troubles. Nanette told deputies on the scene that she was worried about a former boyfriend of Leslie's, a contractor by the name of Robert Tarr, known as Bobby. She informed investigators Leslie had told her she planned to block Bobby from texting, calling, and emailing her, basically going no contact with him. Later that evening, news of Leslie's murder began circulating and reached another close friend of hers, Amy Steinhauer. She had also met Bobby Tarr, a divorced father of three, and immediately thought of him. She didn't necessarily believe he would be capable of killing someone when she met him, but she did not have a good impression of him. And when she got the news about Leslie's murder, she called the sheriff's office to give them Bobby Tarr's name, just in case. By the time she had given them that information, the detectives had already set out to find Bobby Tarr. Very telling. Two people were separately telling the police about Bobby Tarr, and that was something that they were not going to take lightly. At the same time, after learning that Chris had been shot in the head, his family rushed to the hospital in Springfield, Illinois, 2 hours from their home. Surgeons were already fighting to save Chris's life, who had a bullet lodged in his brain. Doctors removed parts of Chris's skull and some bullet fragments in his brain before putting him in a medically induced coma. It's unclear exactly at what point in his fight to survive this happened, but during his time in the hospital, he would also suffer three strokes. Chris was not in good shape. Doctors were fighting to save Chris's life, and he had to be placed in a medically induced coma to give his body a chance to heal. And his family was struggling to piece together what had happened. They learned that he had been out with a woman named Leslie Reeves. Chris's mother and sister had never heard of Leslie because this had been Chris's first date with her. So as they sat by Chris's bedside, they did what they could to learn anything about her. They looked her up and tried reaching out to her friends, which was when they found her best friend, Nanette. When they got a hold of Nanette, she told them the same thing she had told investigators. She suspected Leslie's ex-boyfriend, Bobby Tarr, was behind the shooting. That night, sheriff's deputies went to Bobby Tarr's home in Collinsville, an hour south of the crime scene. According to authorities, when they showed up at his home, Bobby never asked why they wanted to talk to him. He just agreed to go to the police station without a lawyer. Personally, if police showed up at my door asking me to come down to the station with them for questioning, I would want to know why, but I guess he didn't need them to tell him, which again is telling. Though her friend said the couple had broken up, Bobby told investigators that he and Leslie were still together. When asked if the couple had a lot of issues, Bobby Tarr told investigators he and Leslie weren't worse than the average couple. When investigators finally told Bobby that Leslie was dead, that was when he acted surprised and started asking questions. He wanted to know how she died and what had happened to her. Lead Detective Jeff Roach said, "That's why we're here with you. You help me believe that you're not involved in this." And Bobby Tarr responded, "I'm not involved in anything." When Detective Jeff Roach asked Bobby if he knew where Farmersville, Illinois was, he told them he'd never been there and he'd never even heard of it. So they asked him where he was the night before Thanksgiving. Bobby told them he had gone to a buddy's house, pretty briefly. That friend lived a short distance from Bobby's home. He said he wasn't there very long and he came back around 6:30-ish. And after that, according to Bobby, he was home all night long. Investigators believed the shooting had taken place sometime early Thanksgiving morning, after 1 a.m. Bobby said they could talk to his daughter who had been home with him all that night to corroborate his alibi, which was exactly what investigators did. So Bobby Tarr's daughter, 17-year-old Shelby, was brought into the police station and was put into a different room from her father for questioning. She told them that her father had actually left home twice that night. The first time did line up with what Bobby had already told investigators. He had left around 6:30 and then came home around half an hour later. But then after getting home, he told his daughter he had to go back out. He didn't get back home until around 9:15-ish. According to Shelby, her father had been gone for more than 2 hours, and when he got home, he was visibly upset. Bobby didn't mention anything about that in his story, so wherever he had been, Bobby didn't want the police to know about it. Shelby then went on to tell them that her father was crying when he got home, sobbing even, and he told her that he missed Leslie. Shelby went to bed around 9:30 and was woken up by her father around 2:45 a.m. He had been acting strangely. He told her he couldn't sleep, and he started doing laundry and pacing around the room. Things were not looking good for Bobby Tarr right now. I guess he was just banking on the fact that his daughter would lie for him, because he did not do a very good job at all at hiding his shady behavior from her before actively leading police to call her in for questioning about his alibi. Bold of him to assume that his 17-year-old would straight up lie to the police about her father's extremely shady behavior. Having to do with murder, by the way. So detectives went back to Bobby and told him that his story wasn't matching up with his daughter's, which was when his story, unsurprisingly, had changed. He told them that he had gone to his friend's house twice, but still insisted that he had been home by 8 p.m., which was basically suggesting that his daughter had gotten it wrong. As he sat in the police station, Bobby Tarr's house was in the process of being searched, and during that search, detectives found his phone and a Glock pistol. Shelby had also told investigators her father had a different gun, but strangely enough, they couldn't find it. She described the gun to them exactly, telling them it was a small army green gun. She had seen it the day before Thanksgiving in her father's sock drawer, but when she went to go get some socks, it, for some reason, wasn't there anymore. While investigators continued to investigate, Bobby Tarr sat in the police station overnight. They learned his car had been captured by license plate reader cameras just after midnight, the night of the shooting. The cameras were near a gas station, and they had discovered that Tarr had bought gas there just after midnight. The gas station was in Troy, near Tarr's home, about an hour from the crime scene in Farmersville. So at the police station, they confronted him with the gas station receipt, calling him a liar. Bobby claimed he wasn't a liar just because he didn't remember going out to get gas, but it was very odd considering Bobby told them he was 100% positive he hadn't been anywhere else. Andrew Affrunti, the Montgomery County state attorney, believed it was significant because even though it wasn't near the crime scene, he still lied to them about it, which was a red flag. I think it's incredibly significant because, one, he said he was home all night, which he obviously was not. Two, they said they thought the shooting happened just after or around 1 a.m., and he got gas at a gas station near his house, which is about an hour away from the crime scene, just after midnight. So it would make perfect sense for him to leave his house, get gas, and then drive an hour to the crime scene, commit the crime, and then come home and wake up his daughter at the exact time that she said she was woken up by her father around 2:45 a.m. It's like the perfect timing of everything. It's definitely circumstantial. It doesn't prove it by any means, but it doesn't make him look good.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio.
Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Bobby wanted to know what him getting gas proved. Investigators believed it was proof that Bobby was lying about his whereabouts that night, and because of that, they placed him under arrest. Andrew Affrunti said they arrested Bobby immediately because they feared Chris Smith's life was in danger, and they hadn't found the murder weapon yet. If he was out of custody, they worried he may take further steps to dispose of the evidence and potentially harm Chris even further and get rid of the only witness. Only one day after Chris Smith was left fighting for his life and Leslie Reeves was killed, detectives believed they had the man responsible in custody. In his only interview with the media, Bobby Tarr said they got the wrong guy and that he would prove his innocence. But after his arrest, his story changed once again. He still stuck to the fact that he was innocent, but now he was saying that he was, in fact, at Chris Smith's house the night before Thanksgiving. So oddly enough, he placed himself at the scene of the crime that night. He did his one and only interview with 48 Hours, and when he did, he admitted he was at Chris Smith's house the night before Thanksgiving. He claimed the night began when he met Leslie Reeves at her part-time job at a loft store. He then said, quote, "She had said she was going to go meet some friends because one of their friends was playing in a band, and she asked me if I wanted to go. And I said, well, you know, I would go, but I have my youngest daughter staying with me for a week." Bobby said that was when he declined the invitation, and Leslie asked if he would follow her to Farmersville because her van was unreliable, and so he did. So that was his version of events. That was why he ended up in Farmersville. Leslie had asked him to follow her to Farmersville because her van was unreliable. And this was after she had invited him to some friend's concert. And Leslie's friend Amy said Bobby's story makes no sense whatsoever. In fact, just a few weeks earlier, Leslie had told Amy that Bobby had shown up while she was on a first date with a different man. And after that incident, Leslie told Amy that she was scared of Bobby, texting Amy, quote, "I could be killed by him someday if I don't cut all contact." How sad and scary is that? And that was precisely why Amy called police when she found out Leslie had been murdered, because her friend had texted her not long prior saying that this man could potentially kill me because he's doing things that are scaring me. During his interview with 48 Hours, he was asked about this text and was asked, "How does that make any sense that this woman who was afraid you would kill her would invite you back to another man's house?" And his response was just, "I don't understand that text in general." He said he had no idea why she thought he might kill her. Bobby's explanation was that Leslie liked to lie to her friends about their relationship, and he insisted that she asked him to follow her to Farmersville. What a pile of bullshit. This man just spews bullshit. He said he followed her there and arrived around 7:30. He parked his car in front of the house, in front of her van. And that's as far as he went. He never went back to Farmersville again. But that begged the question, why did he lie to detectives if he had an innocent explanation for why he was in Farmersville? Bobby claimed there had been tension between his daughter and Leslie. He didn't want her to know that he had gone to meet her that night. And the reason he lied to police was because he was afraid they would tell his daughter where he had been. Which is obviously, again, bullshit. But don't you think if it wasn't bullshit, he could have said, "Hey, police, this is what truly happened. can we just not tell my daughter? Because there's just some weirdness going on between my ex-girlfriend and my daughter, and I don't really want her to know where I was. But just for the sake of my alibi in the story, this is what actually happened. Obviously, that would be a logical response for someone who was innocent and was wanting to tell the actual truth, but it's not what he did because he was lying through his teeth and changing his story every chance he got. What Bobby Tarr did have on his side was the fact that there was no physical evidence connecting him to the crime scene. Investigators didn't find any DNA or fingerprints inside the house, and when they searched his white Jetta, they didn't find any shards of glass or bloodstains, and authorities still had not found the murder weapon. But a week after the shooting, they got a phone call from Bobby's friend, Billy Adams. Adams told them that Bobby had called him from jail requesting something odd, and that call was recorded, so they listened to it. Bobby asked Adams to go to his house and look for some deck brackets. In the jail call, Bobby Tarr said, "I got some special aluminum brackets that I need you to go get because they're for another job that I didn't tell Dad about yet, so don't say nothing to him." Billy Adams in the jail call said, "They're aluminum?" And Bobby Tarr said, "Yeah, get them and get rid of them." So instead of doing that, Adams contacted the sheriff's office. Deputies suspected Bobby knew the phone call was being recorded and spoke to his friend in code about something other than deck brackets. Investigators were on their hands and knees in Bobby Tarr's yard looking for the gun. Dan Foltz, Bobby Tarr's defense attorney, said they searched that area thoroughly and there was no gun. You know what they did find? Deck brackets. Which was unfortunately true. The deck brackets were real. But a few days later, they got another phone call, this time from Bobby Tarr's brother, asking them to come back to the house. Tarr's family gave deputies a Ziploc bag they said had been found in the same yard they had been searching just days earlier. Inside was a Springfield Hellcat 9mm pistol and silver-colored ammunition. I quickly want to point out that the people in Bobby Tarr's life have no problem going to police and saying, "Here is what this man is doing. He's extremely shady. You can have him." It is slightly weird that they searched that yard and could not find that gun, and then his brother called them and said, "Hey, here's the gun. I found it in the yard." It makes me wonder, was a family member, potentially the brother, holding the gun and hiding it for him, and then decided that that was not something he wanted to do, and then said, "Hey, I found it in the yard." I don't know. Either way, they now had the murder weapon, and it was Bobby Tarr's, and it was allegedly found in his yard. The Illinois State Police determined the gun was the murder weapon, and the ammunition matched the casings found at the crime scene. Because his brother had given police the gun, Bobby claimed he was being framed. Of course. Anything to get out of this, but he's not going to. Bobby Tarr said, "We still to this day don't know how that ended up there, specifically in that spot that they searched." But if someone was framing Bobby, he or she would have to be pretty detail-oriented. The state police say Tarr's fingerprints was on the Ziploc bag. They didn't find any fingerprints on the gun, but there was a fingerprint on the Ziploc bag. Bobby Tarr's attorney was adamant that Bobby would not have been dumb enough to put the gun where they said it was found, because they basically were claiming that they found it right next to his front door, essentially. And he had a 1-acre lot. So his attorney was basically saying he's not dumb enough to hide the murder weapon on this 1-acre property right near his house and think that that's a good spot. Bobby also pointed out that neither his prints nor DNA were found on the gun itself, only the Ziploc bag. Andrew Affrunti didn't think that that proved anything. He just thought that Bobby cleaned the gun and missed a spot on the Ziploc bag. There was DNA found on the gun, however, it wasn't Bobby's. The spot was Leslie's DNA, found on the guide rod of the gun. Bobby Tarr's explanation was the gun wasn't his, it belonged to Leslie. He began saying he purchased the Hellcat and Leslie bought it from him. It's true that Leslie Reeves did own guns, but if there was anyone who knew what guns Leslie Reeves owned, it would be Howard Bolton, her close friend and firearm instructor. Leslie took classes from Howard Bolton at her local gun range on several occasions. According to him, Leslie was becoming a very good shot. Ann said that Leslie had organized a class called Girls with Guns not long before she was murdered. Bobby was trying to claim the gun belonged to Leslie, but Howard said he never saw that gun. Howard believed Leslie's DNA could only be on the guide rod of that murder weapon because the gun was fired at her at close range. Because the gun was fired at close range, her DNA contaminated that part of the gun. Howard also said, had Leslie brought the gun she actually owned that night, quote, I assure you the outcome would have been different. It is just so sad to know that she is someone who so loudly and proudly advocated for domestic violence survivors and who taught self-defense classes and who wanted to empower women to defend themselves from people who wanted to cause them harm, whether that was with a gun or without. But her life ended up being cut short in the very way that she was trying to help women defend themselves against. It is so sad. So yeah, I also wish the outcome were different. As investigators continued to build a case against Bobby Tarr, he was allegedly hatching a plan to silence the only witness, meaning Chris Smith, which is what they were afraid of and why they arrested him so quickly in the first place. Bobby Tarr claimed he was innocent, but the case against him hinged on what Chris Smith said. If he were able to identify Bobby Tarr as his attacker and Leslie's murderer, that would pretty much seal the deal. However, at the time, Chris was still in a coma, and it wasn't clear if he were going to be able to testify. While Chris lay helpless in a hospital bed, authorities say Bobby Tarr was scheming to silence him for good. An inmate and former cellmate of Bobby Tarr came forward to investigators and told them Bobby paid him $10,000 to shoot and kill the lead detective of the case and Chris Smith. Based on those allegations, a grand jury indicted Bobby Tarr on 2 counts of solicitation of murder. Bobby Tarr says the alleged plot was a lie concocted by the former cellmate. Tarr says he loaned that cellmate $10,000 for his bond and that it had nothing to do with Chris Smith. Out of the goodness of his heart, he just loaned his cellmate $10,000 for his bond? Yeah, I don't think so. When asked if he was worried if Chris would testify against him and point out if he was the shooter, Bobby said, quote, I was not worried one iota. It still wasn't even certain that Chris would be able to testify in court or what he remembered. Chris had woken up from his coma in early January of 2022, about 2 months after the shooting. In the early days, his voice was so weak that his old friend Mark Reardon, a talk show host in St. Louis, said he barely recognized it was Chris on the phone. He had a long road to recovery ahead of him. After intense physical therapy, Chris was beginning to make incredible strides. He was much stronger than when he woke up from the coma, but he discovered there were gaps in his memory. The unfortunate reality was Chris didn't remember anything from that night. He said, quote, I wish to God I could remember something, even just a smidgen of something, but I remember nothing. Sadly, he remembered nothing of the shooter or of Leslie Reeves. He had no memory of her. It was their first date after all. What Chris could focus on was working out at the gym most mornings to try to regain enough muscle so that he would be able to walk without assistance. Doctors had told him his chances were very low that he would return to his previous level of functioning, and likely may not even be able to walk again. So Chris and his team were dedicated to doing everything they could to aid in his recovery. But Chris was painfully aware how different his life was from what it once was. Chris said, quote, my left leg is partially paralyzed from my hip to my knee, then from my knee to my toes, completely paralyzed. So if there's any neurosurgeons out there, any researchers out there, please get a hold of me. I'll be your guinea pig. Just make me normal and give my life back, please. I'm half the man I used to be, but I'm trying to get it back as hard as I can. Tough doesn't even describe it. He's still living with fragments of the bullet in his brain, because doctors say it's in a spot that make it too dangerous to remove. He can even still feel the point on his skull where the bullet went in. To make matters even worse, while Chris was in a coma, he said looters descended on his house and stole his guitar and amps, even his above-ground pool. Later, his house was sold at auction and then razed. All that's left is an empty lot. Chris said, I lost my house, lost my truck. I mean, I've literally lost my life without being killed. He had to move back in with his mother, Sharon Costanza, who said, "I thank my blessings daily that he's here with us. I just wish that this guy didn't take everything away from him." What a nightmare. He lost almost everything. He thankfully had an incredible group of people around him and amazing friends and family, but even with that support system, that must have felt next to impossible to conquer. His dog Tiki is still in his life, but he doesn't live with her anymore, but he does visit with her. He also had to live almost 2 hours away from his 12-year-old daughter and ex-wife since he had been living with his mother during recovery. So it was an extremely challenging road for him. The trial of Bobby Tarr was set for April of 2024, but Chris would not be there. He told the prosecutor he was too angry to attend, but Bobby Tarr would be there and said he was eager to tell the jury that he was not a violent man.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
When Bobby Tarr went on trial, prosecutors told the jury that he killed Leslie Reeves rather than allow her to live the life she wanted, a life without him. Andrew Frunti said, "Mr. Tarr couldn't deal with the fact that Leslie was seeing somebody else, and he had to go and take care of it." Bobby secretly followed Leslie Reeves to Farmersville early that evening, and shortly afterwards, his phone began showing some interesting activity. Affrunti claimed he actually searched Chris Smith on his phone and had tried to find his Facebook profile. Bobby then headed home and texted his friend Billy Adams, quote, "I don't feel like she would drive that far for a party or go out with a girlfriend. I think it's for a dude." He also searched whether police could track his phone if he was using a VPN, a virtual private network. He was researching to determine whether or not that would mask where his location was while he was using his phone. And authorities say around midnight, Bobby left home, stopping at a gas station, and then, according to Affrunti, surveillance videos and cell tower records show that Bobby drove back to Farmersville. Affrunti believed that Bobby Tarr 100% went back with the intent to do serious harm to both Leslie Reeves and Chris Smith. But with one victim dead and the other with no memory, it was difficult to say with certainty what had happened. And the prosecution knew that the jury may not favor their case. But the prosecution argued that sometime after 1 a.m., as Bobby Tarr tried to enter through the back door of Chris Smith's house, Leslie and Chris tried to keep him out. Crime scene investigator Josh Easton testified there was some kind of altercation or struggle, and that's when the glass was broken. The refrigerator was pulled away from the wall where it appeared it normally was. Prosecutors believed Leslie was trying to use the refrigerator to block the door. And based on where Chris was shot in the head, they think he was crouching down to help her. Affrunti believed while Chris was crouched down to hold the door shut, Bobby shot through the door and struck Chris. With Chris incapacitated, Affrunti said Leslie hid in the living room. Bobby Tarr entered the home, found her, shot and killed her. Affrunti said, "I strongly believe that he walked in and executed her." The prosecution had a strong case. But again, without an eyewitness, it wasn't airtight. Dan Foltz, Bobby's attorney, claimed there was no evidence to support that was what happened. There was no evidence Leslie pushed the refrigerator. None of Leslie's fingerprints or blood was on the refrigerator. He said from the amount of blood in the kitchen, it appeared that Chris fought his assailant in the kitchen and that the assailant couldn't have been Bobby Tarr because he would have been covered in blood, which he was not. They did not identify a single piece of DNA in his car. They didn't identify a bloody fingerprint. They didn't identify anything tying him to that crime scene. But the prosecution's explanation to that was that the house wasn't actually bloody when Bobby Tarr left. They said Chris bled heavily in the 12 hours it took for help to arrive. And while prosecution did not have a lot of forensic evidence linking Bobby Tarr to the crime scene, Affrunti says his phone activity, his lies to investigators, and the evidence found on the Hellcat all proved his guilt. When they put all of that together, that was when you got the clear picture of what happened. Bobby Tarr chose not to testify. His attorney said despite him having a story to tell the jury, they made the strategic decision to keep him off the stand because it may have opened the door for a whole lot of more damning evidence to be used to cross-examine him. The defense didn't put on any witnesses and counted on the jury to find reasonable doubt in the lack of physical evidence, which really was a possibility. After 3 hours, the jury found Bobby Tarr guilty of first-degree murder and attempted murder. 2 months later, Tarr was back in court for sentencing, and this time, so was Chris Smith, to tell the judge how the shooting impacted him and his family. Tarr also spoke at his sentencing and once again denied shooting Chris Smith and Leslie Reeves. Regardless, he was sentenced to prison for 85 years. The solicitation of murder charges against Bobby Tarr were dismissed, but he received 50 years for 2 counts of firearm enhancement, 25 years for Leslie's murder, and 10 years for Chris Smith's attempted murder. He is required to serve 85% of his term and would be 128 years old when eligible for parole. So he is never getting out, and he deserves it. Leslie Reeves' friends are focused on keeping her memory alive. I found a website where some of her friends wrote some really beautiful things in her memory, and I want to read a little blurb from the website because it was really beautiful and I think paints a really nice picture of who Leslie was. Leslie was not a one-woman show. That was not her style. She created and surrounded herself with a tribe, safe places, counselors, food pantries, groups, nonprofit organizations. She had them all on speed dial to help anyone who needed assistance. Many people were not aware of all that Leslie did, and for a good reason. Confidentiality often meant life or death for her clients. She would move her classes to different locations so that only those who were invited knew where the class was for that event. I remember having breakfast with Leslie, and I asked her what she was doing after our meeting. She said she was helping a woman and her 2 children move out of their abusive household while the husband was at work. That was who she was. There is no doubt that she became very vulnerable advocating in the way that she did. But honestly, I do not think she would have stepped back from any situation if it meant helping someone else. The tragedy to this situation is that she lost her life in the same way that she protected others. Her children were her life. She would show me funny pictures of them or tell me about some crazy stories. They loved their mother, and my heart goes out to her children and her family. My hope is that as a proud member of her tribe, that we can all come together to remember Leslie's legacy in a way for which she would be proud. Some words that best describe Leslie: powerful, lovable, strong, inside and out, gracious, vulnerable, and funny. And I definitely could not have said it better than that. Those are beautiful words to describe someone who seems so powerful and amazing. My heart goes out to her family and friends. She will definitely be missed. Chris Smith says he never expected he'd be a victim of domestic violence and cautions other men to take a hard look at their behavior. More than 3 years later, Chris is still recovering and remains partially paralyzed on his left side. Years of occupational and physical therapy combined with stem cell transplant have helped him on his journey as he defies the medical odds. Chris's experience prompted him to write a book titled My Fatal First Date, which details the evening of the shooting and his ongoing recovery. He said, quote, "It gives you hope, inspires you, and shows people that you get shot even if you get shot in the head. You have a stroke, You have a TBI, traumatic brain injury. Your life's not over. Smith hopes to motivate others who have suffered similar injuries while also providing medical experts with a testimony not found in medical journals, which I think is incredible. Shout out to him for overcoming so much hardship and coming out on the other side and writing a book and inspiring others and continuing to work hard and do amazing work. And in happier news, Chris fell in love with a woman named Michelle Albrecht, saying, "She's an angel, loving me and accepting me the way that I am." And he proposed to her on stage. He bought a house and is working to return to his old way of life, including singing in his band. He said, "I'm going to walk again with no cane and no wheelchair. I'm going to run again and I'm going to play guitar again. I'm not the kind of person that's just going to sit back and do nothing. I want my life back." He also said, "Don't ever give up on anything, ever, ever. No matter how bad things are, don't ever give up." And My Fatal First Date is now available on Amazon for anyone who would like to give it a read. But that is the story of Chris Smith and Leslie Reeves and their fatal first date. What an awful situation. And what an evil man. I think I've said all I want to say about the situation, but I am just so glad that Chris has been able to come out on the other side and continues to live his life in such an amazing way. And he found happiness. I mean, it got dark in there for a second for him. I mean, for everyone, of course, but hearing about not only was he shot and have to go through surgeries and have strokes and be placed in a medically induced coma, which is, of course, terrifying and dangerous, but on top of that, have his house looted and his pool stolen and his home was sold at auction while he was fighting for his life. He lost everything. It would be so easy to give up entirely after something like that, and he didn't. Also, his prognosis was not good. Doctors said he likely would never walk again, and he would not get nearly the function that he had before the attack. But he's worked so hard, and he's, I believe, walking again and continuing to make progress. And sure, maybe not all the way back to where he was, but continuing to strive for progress. And I just think that's amazing and inspiring. So all power to him and good vibes. He seemed like an amazing man to begin with, but he continues to prove that he's doing amazing things. So really good for him. And congratulations to him and his fiance or wife, potentially at this point. That's beautiful too. But anyway, I think that's all I have to say about that. Why don't we move on to a bit of a palate cleanser so I can tell you something good and we can go on with our days as normal. My good thing is that I have taken up a new hobby. I have gotten into knitting. I'm very new to knitting. I have knit about 70% of a scarf, which is just the same stitch over and over. So I really feel like I've done almost nothing as far as knitting goes, but I have big dreams. I have big knitting dreams, and I've bought myself a set of knitting needles, and I'm deep into knitting TikTok, and I've made myself a profile on like a knitting forum online, and I've been saving patterns that I'm inspired by. So I don't know if I'll be able to do any of it, but I definitely am interested. It's very overwhelming. Knitting seems difficult, but also easy. I don't know. I go back and forth on it because part of me is like, how hard could it be? But then the other part of me sees someone doing it and I'm like, oh my God, that sounds really difficult and looks really hard. So I'm sure it's a bit of both. And there's obviously so much like technique and artistry, and it can be very difficult and I'm sure very easy depending on the project you're doing. So anyway, point being, I've gotten into a new hobby and I'm really enjoying it. So to anyone out there, if you're looking for a new hobby, check out knitting. I don't know. And if you knit and you've got some pointers, send them my way because I'm brand new and I'm a little scared, but I'm also very excited. So there's that. The knitting community is also very like welcoming and beautiful and lovely. So I'm excited to be a part of that as well. But that's my good thing. Anyway, thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to check out all of our bonus episodes, head over to patreon.com/nottodaypodcast. If you or anyone you know has a story of survival or something crazy that's happened to you and you'd like to share with us and possibly hear it on an upcoming listeners episode, send it to notodaypodcast@gmail.com. We post pictures of all the stories we talk about over on Instagram when I remember and catch up, over on Instagram at nottoday_podcast. We have a TikTok that is Not Today Podcast and a Twitter that is Not Today Podcast, but the T on the end podcast is a 3 because that makes sense. And just keep breathing. Yeah.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.